Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with tech stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
You took an oath, if you recall, when you first came to work for me. And I don't mean to the National Security Advisor of the United States. I mean to his boss. And I don't mean the president. You gave your word to his boss. You gave your word to the people of the United States. Your word is who you are.
Actually, it seems like three words. Oh, wait. No, sorry.
No, it's just the one. So, today we're going to talk about a pretty sticky subject.
Yeah, this is going to be a pretty complicated subject as well.
Yeah, and it's no surprise that it's sticky, because things often are sticky after a leak. You like how I did that?
Yeah, I did.
I am suffering sleep deprivation, but I can still make a bad pun. So we're going to talk about WikiLeaks. Now, you've probably heard about this site if you're not already familiar with it from visiting it. WikiLeaks is a site that has been in the news quite a bit. In fact, the day that we're recording this podcast, news about WikiLeaks is exploding across the internet.
Yeah, it's still coming fast and furious. The day we're recording this, it's only been a few days since the site posted 220 new cables from the United States government in a batch of a much, much larger batch of different communications.
Right, like hundreds of thousands of communications.
Yes.
And by cables, we're specifically saying messages.
Yes, I kind of thought that was funny, but that we're still using that term to describe these different messages. These types of messages have been around for literally hundreds of years.
Yeah.
The United States correspondents around the world. We're talking people like diplomats of different varieties, intelligence officers pass these different kinds of cables back and forth between one another. Some of them are coded.
Right.
Some of them are not coded, but they're still coded.
Yeah, some of them are listed as secret, but they're not necessarily top secret. It's essentially meant for, for the people to whom the cable's concerned, right? It's not meant for general public consumption.
Yeah, and in a lot of cases, it's not meant for the consumption of the people they're talking about too. And in some cases, they're just completely not flattering. Like, you know, the ambassador from so and so is a real Nimrod.
Right, he's flabby.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's some
personal attacks in them. Well, let's really talk about what WikiLeaks is. First of all, it is a nonprofit organization. Its main outlet is its website, which, depending upon when you listen to this podcast, may or may not be available when you try to navigate to it. This morning, when I tried to navigate to it, it was the official website URL was gone. Like, mm-hmm. if you try to go to it, it said that there was something wrong. And sometimes that just happens, was essentially the message.
Yeah.
But there are lots of mirror sites up there that still were working. So mm-hmm. I could still navigate to WikiLeaks. It's just I couldn't go to the official URL.
Right. And I think it's important to note, at least I think it is important to say that this is not affiliated with the Wikimedia group.
Right.
That started Wikipedia and Wikimedia Commons and so many of the other wiki sites. It uses a wiki.
Right. It's using the wiki as the foundation for the website.
So I don't know if there doesn't seem to be a lot of I'm having trouble talking today. A lot of confusion about that.
Right.
But
right.
I think it's important to notice that despite the fact that it's got wiki in there, it's not like a trademarked word.
Right. So, it's two separate entities.
This
it
is
has nothing to do with the Wikipedia folks.
No, this is this actually comes from someone else, not inside the United States. His name is Julian.
Yes, Julian Assange. He's mm-hmm. Founder and editor-in-chief of WikiLeaks, also sort of the public face of the site.
Yes, yes, he is indeed.
He's not the only one working on this. It's not a one-man operation by any stretch of the imagination, but he's definitely the personality that is, for better or worse, connected incontrovertibly with WikiLeaks.
Nice.
Thank you. I had to slow that down because I wasn't sure I could pronounce it. I'm also having trouble with my words today. At any rate, so Julian Assange, he's one of the founders of the site, or the founder of the site. The site launched publicly in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just been in the news it really started to take off in the news in 2010. But in 2007 was when it launched, and it's a project of the Sunshine Press.
Yes.
Now, the purpose of WikiLeaks is, again, it's a nonprofit organization. Its purpose is to be a place where you can leak information. You can drop information that's important, that is being hidden in some way, that's not being distributed to the general public, but is very important information.
Or yes.
It's supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, the idea here is that the governments are performing actions and distributing information that's above the heads of the citizens. And the philosophy of WikiLeaks is that's a bad thing,
mm-hmm.
that government should be much more transparent, particularly a representative government, which presumably is representing the interests of the people,
mm-hmm.
right? You're talking about people who elect specific individuals to represent them in a official government capacity. Well, if the government's not transparent, you don't know if your representatives are doing a good job or not,
mm-hmm.
or doing what you want them to do. It may turn out that the government is acting in a way that is against the wishes of the people it represents. And then you have to ask yourself, is this a legitimate government? Now, these are big ideas, mm-hmm. and I'm not saying that WikiLeaks answers them in any way, shape, or form, but it's kind of their philosophy that information needs to get out there, and they are a kind of a dumping ground for information.
Right, right. That's really what I think most of the debate is at this point. Is this leaked information serving a higher purpose and serving the people? And it's not limited to the information from the United States. There are other sources of information as well, and some of the information that has been leaked from the United States government also affects other nations. So this is something that's affecting people the world over. Now, as a former newspaper reporter, I can tell you that This is a role that in the United States has been typically carried out by the press or
right.
by the news media, mm-hmm. and has been also done in the past by in several pretty high profile cases. I can think of several offhand, and I'll bring one up later when we get into the actual source of this particular information. Because really, WikiLeaks, though it has been around, it wasn't until they got some information from one particular person. Well, one allegedly from one particular person. Mm-hmm. That would be private first class Bradley Manning,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
who has been basically charged with supplying confidential information, including 251,287 cables, which apparently were gleaned from a military database or databases,
yeah.
and smuggled out theoretically. I should say allegedly on a CD labeled Lady Gaga.
Yeah, this raises some questions about security within the military. You said, or what was his rank again? Private first class.
He's a non-commissioned officer.
Right, private first class. And so you think, okay, well, at least on some level, you would assume that the information this person could access would not be critical information, because he's not really of a rank that would allow him to see information that's classified above secret, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, you would also think that there wouldn't be an easy way to get that information off of the system and then into someone else's hands. In fact, a lot of government offices, including the military, are now looking at systems that would not allow you to pull information and put it onto another form of media.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't be able to use it like a USB drive or burn it to a disk, because the system itself would prevent you from doing so.
Yeah. I would like to point out that I misspoke.
What's that?
Private first class is not a non-commissioned officer.
Oh, good.
But he's a private first class.
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad. So all of you
bugged me. I knew I had misspoken as soon as I said it.
And I am just going to say I am mostly ignorant of the military, other than the fact that I'm very thankful for them. So, yeah, that's why I didn't jump on there and correct you, because I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's one of those things that I knew as soon as it was itching in the back of my head.
Yeah.
You just said something wrong.
Why did you say that?
Yes, okay.
So, all right. So we've got this site where it's hit the news because all these different messages that really were not meant for public consumption are now out there and available. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that we automatically go through and read them all. A lot of newspapers did, because, you know, this was ripe for picking through this and seeing what was actually interesting on there. So a lot of the fallout from the whole WikiLeaks situation really comes from secondary sources, right? Like other newspapers and things of that nature.
Well, that's true. Some of the information was also leaked directly to some of the publications as well.
Right.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the New York Times was one of those.
Yes.
They got their own copy of these documents.
That's true.
And I feel compelled to point out, too, that a lot of these cables, especially the diplomatic cables, they're released anyway, but they're usually released later, frequently when the people involved are dead, so that we can't hear about how flabby they are.
Right. Or we can't hear their reaction to
exactly.
being called flabby.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sorry. That was another misstatement on my part. I'm doing great today.
Man, considering I'm the one who hasn't had any sleep for so long, never mind.
Anyway, that's what I get for changing the day that we podcast. These documents are usually published years after the fact. And in this case, these documents are much, much more fresh than those. I believe the number I read was the mid-70s is now where they're being published. Where they're up to in these documents, typically like the official publication of these documents, and some of them are probably are held back even longer, depending on how sensitive they are.
And that's a good point, because some people may be under the impression that the documents that are on WikiLeaks are really recent, like within the last couple of years, and some of them are. I mean, there are documents specifically about the war in Afghanistan and the war in Iraq and things of that nature. So there are some that are more recent. Now, it's just this most the fresh batch that hit WikiLeaks is mm-hmm. not among them. Those are older documents.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get too embroiled in the whole government thing, WikiLeaks doesn't just publish messages about governments. They'll also do it about companies, about mm-hmm. individuals. Really, it's anything that kind of, I guess, that WikiLeaks feels is being disingenuous or is trying to hide something that the site feels people should know, mm-hmm. they'll go ahead and publish it. Now, maybe not to the extent that everyone at WikiLeaks wishes the site did.
Right.
And that tortured sentence was really a way of saying there are some people who had worked for WikiLeaks in the past who felt that perhaps Assange was taking a very specific approach that they didn't agree with. And the main argument was that Assange's MO was to wait for these really big mm-hmm. Leaks, like the 200 plus thousand cables to come out, and then would release them in a big batch. And it gets a lot of publicity mm-hmm. and a lot of attention toward WikiLeaks. The argument that the people who left WikiLeaks say is more important is you should be publishing the smaller stuff too. It doesn't attract the attention of the big leaks like the cables, but it's equally as important to people to know that information, right?
Right.
So they're essentially accusing Assange of ignoring the smaller stories in favor of the big stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of them left, and a few of them are planning on launching essentially a competitive site to WikiLeaks that would pick up where WikiLeaks leaves off. Chief among them would be Daniel Domscheitberg.
Okay.
One of the fellows who was working on WikiLeaks in Germany. He left and is publishing a nonfiction book in January of 2011 about working for WikiLeaks and sort of the kind of inside baseball on what it was like working for the website and what led to his decision to leave.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds to me like he still believes in the official philosophy of WikiLeaks. He just doesn't feel that the site is carrying that philosophy to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks that they've sort of lost their way. At least that's what I glean from the interviews I've read. I have not spoken with him personally, so I can't really be certain.
Yeah.
But at any rate, so you've got this website that's publishing hundreds of thousands of documents that were not necessarily meant to be read by you and I. And that's drawn some attention, to say the least. And it's drawn a lot of criticism as well. And some of those criticisms range from this is irresponsible and it puts the United States in danger and other nations at risk as well by revealing information that was not meant for everyone to access. And because it's on the internet,
mm-hmm.
it's not like it's just going to one audience. It's going out to the world.
Right.
Now, there are some countries that have said that they aren't going to pay any attention to the documents that are on WikiLeaks, that they're not going to give it the satisfaction, I guess. Like China has specifically said that it's going to block WikiLeaks, which, no surprise, really, it's China.
Yeah.
But it's going to block WikiLeaks, and they're not going to pay attention to the messages that are listed in there because they think it would be more harmful than good. Now, whether that claim is true or not, I can't say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether they'll truly not look at the messages, who's to say, besides China? And, you know, they're claiming one way, so.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, there are other people, specifically politicians in the United States, who have said that the behavior of Assange and the WikiLeaks site in general has been very irresponsible to the point of possibly being treasonous or a
yes.
matter of espionage.
Mm-hmm.
These are serious charges, and depending on your point of view, they could be punishable to pretty big extremes. In fact, I think a few politicians have more or less called for Assange's head. You know, I think in their mind they would put it on a pike and set it out in front of Hudson Bay and say this is a warning to all of you.
Yeah. He could end up with a lengthy prison term. Anyway, At least according to the information I read from Ann Flaherty from the AP.
Right, but
he is facing that.
But the charges that he's brought up on are not related directly to WikiLeaks.
No, no.
And some have argued that you can't really – what would you charge him with for WikiLeaks? Because according to the site's philosophy, again, they do not solicit information. They offer a dumping ground for information, but they don't go out and ask for it. So in other words, he's just saying, hey, I'm just here and I said that I will accept any information that comes through my door, but I'm not going to go out there door to door and say, hey, do you have any secrets for me to tell? So really that would suggest that the responsibility lies on the people leaking the information, not on WikiLeaks for accepting it, right? I mean, what do you charge someone for hearing a secret? It's not like it's their fault necessarily. I mean, they may say that I've got ears and I'm willing to listen.
Right.
But that's different from going out and seeking out secret information.
True.
So really, there are those who support WikiLeaks who argue, well, the fault lies with people who are leaking this info. So you can't really charge WikiLeaks with anything. There are also those who say, well, even if Assange is guilty of the allegations against him, which, again, don't have anything to do with WikiLeaks, it's a charge of rape, a charge of sexual molestation, and a couple of other related charges. And these are very serious charges. They don't necessarily mean that WikiLeaks is going to go away if Assange is convicted of these charges.
Right.
So, you know, even I think there's some people who support WikiLeaks who go to a true extreme and say that the charges against Assange are manufactured and that some sort of conspiracy and it's all designed to try and make WikiLeaks go away. Right.
Yeah. Well, it kind of makes me think of Al Capone in a way.
Oh, about you go after whatever you can get on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are those people who think that that's what it is. That's the United States government pressuring Sweden to pursue these claims against Assange in order to get him out of the way. I'm a little skeptical of that. First of all, I think that that's placing way too much skepticism against the people claiming these allegations, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's dismissing them entirely. And I think that's irresponsible.
Mm-hmm.
What needs to happen is there needs to be a true investigation that's objective to see if the allegations are, if they hold any weight.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're saying that the women who are claiming these allegations against Assange, that they don't matter. And I think that's just as horrible as some of the other allegations being thrown out by WikiLeaks supporters.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that the allegations are true, of course. And also, it doesn't mean that if Assange were convicted that WikiLeaks would disappear.
Right.
There are other people to carry on WikiLeaks if Assange left. You would just have a different spokesperson.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, apparently there is some kind of – and this is going to be sort of weird because it is possible that before this podcast goes out, this actually will be triggered. But and don't take me literally here, apparently he has referred to a – thermonuclear device, which is not actually a thermonuclear device, but basically it's a mega something. There's a giant file somewhere in the WikiLeaks system that if something happens to the website, it is supposed to be triggered. Now, it's sort of unclear based on the research that I've done whether it's a giant blast of leaks that will be published somewhere in the world that will basically dump all the information at one time, or if it's some kind of code, either, I guess, to prevent another attack or attack the attacker or something. It's sort of unclear what it is. But Assange has said that, you know, if you come after us and completely take down the site, you know, there is something waiting for you. There will be consequences.
That's not doing him any favors either.
No, I don't
it's
think
not,
so either.
Not helping him in the eyes of his critics. So we've gotten to the point where we think that WikiLeaks would stay around even if Assange goes away.
Well, there are enough supporters, too, third-party supporters who are willing to mirror the site, where I don't think that's going to be an issue.
Right. Now, some things that are issues are that the site subsists on donations.
Yes.
Well, a lot of the avenues for donation are getting cut off.
Mm-hmm.
There have been reports that MasterCard, Visa, and PayPal, among other financial services, have ceased payments to WikiLeaks.
That's correct. I've heard that.
So now you're talking about, all right, well, this can't have anything to do with the allegations against Assange, because why would you connect the company with the man, right? It's two different entities.
Right. Of course, so, in the United States here, if it's a company, it is treated like a person.
Right. But and then that's the same thing, though. You say, all right, well, the company's one person, Assange is another person. You can't charge both for the crimes of one.
But when you stick yourself out there, too, and make yourself the face of the company.
Right.
You're running that risk that you will be identified that closely.
So if you do assume that the charges against Assange truly have nothing to do with his role in WikiLeaks.
Right.
And let's go ahead. We'll just say that we'll assume that's true for the sake of this argument.
Okay.
It's harder to say, all right, well, what's the justification for cutting off the avenues for financial support to WikiLeaks? That probably has more to do with the political aspect and the financial aspect of the site than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So if Assange was gone, I would imagine that those blockades would still be up. And at least PayPal, the president of PayPal, said in an interview, the reason why PayPal shut off payments to WikiLeaks was because the State Department said that WikiLeaks was performing illegal activity, and therefore it was against the terms of service for PayPal. So they followed suit and they shut down. So, well, if the State Department tells us it's illegal, we have to follow with what they say. So in this case, it does look like it's government pressure to try and cut off the financial support for WikiLeaks, which that gets pretty thorny. That's a touchy, touchy subject. Because, again, if WikiLeaks is not truly doing anything wrong, if they're just receiving information, if they're not seeking it out, then it becomes sort of a First Amendment thing as well.
Yeah.
Are you suggesting that the First Amendment does not apply in this case? And if so, why? And what is your grounds for this assertion?
Mm-hmm.
Is that constitutional or not? In the meantime, because of these actions, we've also seen some vigilante justice being carried out online by people who either support or oppose WikiLeaks.
Mm-hmm.
In one case, we have denial of service attacks hitting WikiLeaks itself and bringing the site to either a crawl or crashing it at times, carried out presumably by a hacker who goes by the handle The Jester.
Mm-hmm.
And The Jester has claimed responsibility for these attacks that brought WikiLeaks to its virtual knees.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, there's another group that is essentially identified as Anonymous. You may remember we've talked about Anonymous a few times in the past.
Yes, we have.
And Anonymous is targeting the various financial services and companies that oppose WikiLeaks. So they've presumably done distributed denial of service attacks against things like MasterCard and PayPal.
Yes.
So we've got this ugly guerrilla warfare going on in cyberspace among two different camps. The really crazy thing is these hackers are not necessarily state-sponsored at all.
Yeah.
It's not like there's a government behind these hackers. These are a lot of individuals who have a strong opinion about the subject, and they're acting on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's anarchy, really, when you look at it. I mean, right now, from our perspective, from our experience, it just feels like, oh, this one site is really slow. Or, gosh, that's annoying. This site is down.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about it behind the scenes, if you were able to kind of get a virtual look at what's going on, it's some of the fiercest fighting I've seen in an online capacity.
Yep.
And in a way, you might say that this is an indication of what true warfare is going to be like from here on out. It's going to have not just state armies battling one another, but it's going to have concerned people on either side of issues acting on their own on behalf of whatever side they support and using basic computers. I mean, this is not like cutting edge technology by any stretch of the imagination. If you have a decent computer, you can create a botnet.
Yeah.
And you can direct it to attack whichever site you want. Now, the attack might not last very long depending upon the defenses of that site.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do it. And it's truly terrifying to me that this is happening.
Well, did you want to talk about some of the content that was on there? Because just speaking of that reminded me of a topic that we've brought up several times in the show and back on Tech Stuff Live when we still had Tech Stuff Live going was the attack on Google.
Yes.
And apparently the WikiLeaks documents that are already been posted clarified who was actually behind that attack.
Right. If you remember back when this was making the news, the story was that Google's site in China was Google was going to start providing unrestricted search results
right.
in China because the company had come to the conclusion that following China's rules was sort of fundamentally against their philosophy.
Right.
China, as a result, there was an attack on Google websites. There was some data stolen, quite a bit actually, mm-hmm. from Google. And was stolen by hackers, and China claimed that the government had nothing to do with the attacks. The attacks were carried out by
individual hackers.
Yeah, individual hackers who were acting on their own, not state-sponsored.
Turns out, according to the WikiLeaks documents, not so much.
Yeah, according to the WikiLeaks documents, China's not quite as innocent.
No, the Politburo directed the attacks, according to the information. Now, that's something else, too. I don't know whether there's any way to verify the information that has been posted in these cables.
Right.
It's already been pointed out that some of them are actually kind of fluffy and personal. They're
right.
not necessarily, espionage, heavy-duty, high-classified information. So I don't know for sure whether, that's why I'm sort of hedging on that is because according to these documents. But,
right, yeah, and WikiLeaks does claim that they put every single submission through a very rigorous examination to make sure that it's true. And part of that is they say, well, how much would it cost to create a fake version of this? The more it costs, the more likely it's not a fake because it becomes prohibitive, right? But if it would be really easy to make a fake version of that story, well, then you're like, all right, well, this is less reliable. We have to really look into it and see if we can truly source this.
That's logical.
So, yeah, they lay out their process pretty clearly on their page. So you can actually read what process they follow to try and verify a document's veracity.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, we still don't really know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, things go into a spectrum of believability.
Well, that's true, and it's certainly, judging by the reactions of different governments around the world to some of the information that has come out, I'd say that a lot of it is, the information that's been posted so far is probably has a high degree of accuracy, like NATO, trying to apologize to the Russians.
Oh, about the Baltics.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Apparently, and this is another instance where it's not necessarily the United States government that's involved. Of course, they do. They are involved in NATO, but
right.
NATO. Apparently, they leaked a defense plan, and NATO is going, yeah, we're really sorry.
Yeah, a defense plan in the case of essentially an attack by Russia, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So. Here's the thing. Some people argue that the information WikiLeaks reveals is stuff we all know. It's just stuff we don't say. So in other words, like you think about it, it makes sense that we would have contingency plans if random country attacked random other country.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that just makes sense, especially if there's, an antagonistic relationship between the two nations. There have to be contingency plans. If there are no contingency plans, you don't have a good defense system,
mm-hmm.
right? You have to make those plans so that you know how to react in case the worst happens.
Sure.
So we all know this. Everyone knows it, but you don't say it. When you say it, then it becomes a problem. And it's so crazy because everyone knows it already. like wait, are we just having a shared hallucination that we all are ignorant of this information and somehow it doesn't exist until someone says something?
Yeah.
Human beings, we some crazy people. That's all I have to say about that.
It's funny because as I was poking around doing some research for this, I came across the name of somebody from our past that a lot of us either may not have heard of, depending on their age, or had forgotten about somewhat since his name hasn't been in the news.
What's
as
that?
Much. Daniel Ellsworth.
Ah.
You remember him?
Vaguely.
Yes. He used to be in the Marine Corps mm-hmm. in the United States. Later on, he... He went to work for the Rand Corporation in the 1960s, and he ended up working on the McNamara study of United States decision-making in Vietnam, and then came across and supplied some documents known as the Pentagon Papers mm-hmm. to some newspapers, including the Times and the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. And he actually posted, and I'll quote here, "The truth is that every attack now made on WikiLeaks and Julian Assange was made against me and the release of the Pentagon Papers at the time." Yeah. So there is a precedent for sensitive information being leaked to the media of whatever kind of media, you know, to public media, mm-hmm. and it being spread. Now, I mean, not all the media have been okay with posting this. The Times is among those that are posting sort of selectively.
Yeah.
Some of the information.
Well, and it's a totally different world now, too, because it's now possible to distribute this information on a much wider scale than ever before and much, much more easily than ever before. It takes less effort to share even more information than you could in the past.
Yes.
So, and plus there's a ready-built audience in there. We've got an audience of people who, to some degree or another, are disenchanted with the way government runs things, and not just the United States government, but this is true in many countries around the world. Mm-hmm. You have a disenchanted audience, and they're eager to look at this information because it's natural, right? You get this sort of suspicious feeling that things are not going the way they should be, or they're being directed in a way that is somewhat, or at least seems, at least on a surface level, to be somewhat sinister. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't help that you have proclamations from the government claiming that it's going to be more transparent going forward, and that that's their philosophy, is transparency, so that they can prove that they're acting on the best interest of the citizens. And then when things like this come out, it seems to contradict that message.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so it breeds even more distrust, and it breeds more confusion and anger. And so it's really, I mean, it's hard to say who would be at fault. I mean, you could argue that, okay, well, WikiLeaks is at fault because it's letting the information be available. But then you could argue, wait, this information exists whether it's available or not. The people who are at fault are the people who generate this information, who are causing these things to happen.
Right.
And but then you think, well, yeah, but who puts those people in power? Technically, it's us. And then you say, well, yeah, but look at the choices we have. No matter who we put in power there, it just becomes this domino effect until you finally sit down and you're like, I need some chocolate and I'm going to turn on some music, maybe the Monkees, and I'm just going to listen to something happy and I'm not going to pay attention no more.
Well, I think that in these cases, the release of information like this is one thing, but whether or not it fosters a discourse of some kind,
yeah,
whether people
that's
are
debatable.
Talking about debatable. Mm-hmm. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, that's one of the things that I think you could say about releasing it to a major news outlet is whether or not there is any framing of the information, whether it's being released on its own or whether there is a context built around the information that explains what's going on and sort of a dialogue going on about it. You know, so it's kind of interesting because there's, I think that really makes a difference in the way people react to it. And then there are the people who are just information junkies who are just completely fascinated. You know, they're not necessarily the people who are either skeptical of the government's plans or the people who support it, but they're just going, huh,
yeah,
that's weird.
I
have to say some of the stuff that's come out has been really fascinating, just on a completely middle of the dial spectrum, just going, that's really, really interesting, you know, that people are even talking about this stuff, like the unification of Korea.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that's come out that people have been talking about, the possibility that North Korea might cave and they might be able to unify Korea's and the different countries of the world, how they interpret that.
Right.
And I had just never considered that as a possibility in my lifetime. So
yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff. Yeah, it's again, I agree with you. Some of the information that's available on WikiLeaks is not necessarily the most useful, and you kind of wonder why even bother hosting it. Because really, you think about it, you'd think, ultimately, the only thing I see this doing is ticking people off. It doesn't.
Yeah.
It's not helpful in any way. It's not like it. It's not like it reveal, again, a lot of these are the unspoken truths that I was talking about.
Right.
It's stuff that we all kind of know on some level, but to see it written down makes it somehow more real.
Yeah.
In some of those cases, I just don't see any real sense in that. Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, sure, it's there and it's embarrassing, but it's not like it's a betrayal of trust on, the government's part on behalf of the citizens, you know? So,
well, of course, everybody interprets information differently. So something that may be completely benign to me,
right,
may be very inflammatory to someone else.
Yeah, and like that whole cable about how bald guys are just total jerkwads. I mean, that was just mean-spirited.
I told you I'm sorry I wrote that.
Yeah, all right, well, whatever. No take-backs. You know what? We're going to have to wrap this up. But anyway, yeah, the WikiLeaks story, it's going to keep on unfolding. I mean, by the time this podcast publishes, there'll probably be, dozens more developments. But it was something that we felt that we really needed to tackle. And we had a lot of requests from various listeners to talk about this topic.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot that we haven't said.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see more of what comes out about it in the weeks to come, because it's very likely that this will continue for some time.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll do a follow-up on WikiLeaks in the future. I mean, it's really brought a lot of issues on the internet to light.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Not just ones directly connected to WikiLeaks, but free speech issues and mm-hmm. And
journalism issues,
cyber terrorism issues.
Yep.
I mean, there's security problems. There's just so much that WikiLeaks has brought to light directly or indirectly. So it's really been a fascinating and somewhat disturbing story to follow.
And they're important issues to talk about. So
yeah.
I'm glad we have the opportunity to do that.
So far. for today. All right, well, we're going to wrap this up. If you guys want to pipe up and let us know what you think of WikiLeaks, or you have other topics you'd like to suggest, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Our handle there is TechStuff, HSW, or you can email us. That address is TechStuff@HowStuffWorks.com, and Chris and I will talk to you again really soon. Don't tell anyone.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.